So I like mostly minor keys, something sad, which I think kind of works for animals because they can sense the sadness and they try to reassure me and comfort me. They touch me, rub their heads against me. And I choose love songs because I'm convinced that they're very intuitive and that they can sense what I'm trying to say to them. I'm trying to profess my love in a way. I think there's always a way to connect, and if you're being cautious and you don't threaten the animals, something beautiful can happen.
Our guest today is a musician who takes his guitar far beyond the concert hall. He plays in places most of us would never think of, such as venues like farms, zoos, sanctuaries, animal habitats, sitting quietly among animals and letting the music unfold. What's striking in these encounters is not just that animals pause to listen, but that many gradually approach him, settle nearby, and sometimes reach out in moments of gentleness and trust. They're not trained responses, and there's no attempt to control the outcome, only sound, presence, time, shared across species. Today we're exploring with Loris Sadian, otherwise known as Plume, what might be happening in those moments, what animals hear, how trust forms, and what music can reveal when it enters a world not made for humans alone. Plume, welcome to the Creative Process in One Planet podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who haven't seen you play, who haven't discovered your videos, although you have many, many fans and across many disciplines, I just want to paint a picture of what it's like. You're playing to what I think is the toughest crowd. You aren't just traveling to another country. You're setting up outside their home, a sanctuary, farm or stable. They don't know you from Adam. And you're presenting yourself, but little by little, they come up to the fence or across the field, whether it's elephants, lemurs, white tigers, or horses. You don't just win them over. They become transfixed. And by the end, these animals are muzzling up to you. So you really have to discover these videos and Plume's music, this expression of trust that is captured there in such a short space of time. I'm wondering, like, when that wall finally comes down and a non-human animal decides to trust you, what do you feel is shifting inside you in that moment? How does that process begin?
Oh, it's so rewarding, you know, because my videos are 1 minute long usually, but it takes much more time for us to build a connection and a trust. So I will usually play for an animal sometimes for like 30 minutes before he takes the first step towards me. And so, yeah, it feels actually very grateful anytime I get to connect with them because it's not a given. And I guess not many people have this opportunity to see such wild animals all the time. So I also get to do this with my mom because she's my camera woman. So the fact that I get to share this with her as well is pretty special.
And so animals, as I understand, I mean, it's all theoretical on my end, but they're detecting patterns in movement, sound, breath, intention. You know, the human sitting calmly, like you say, producing this kind of non-threatening noise over time, this pattern sound. It's already unusual, I think, for them, for you just to arrive there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's something in the live guitar music, but I definitely think there's something in your performance, because I don't know if you can break it apart, all the little pieces they might be responding to you.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, but I think any musician could connect with them in a way. I think what makes the difference now is that I don't sing around them, but I sing for them. You know, I really try to connect, and I feel like the intent makes all the difference, but it's not necessarily about me per se, but anyone who's willing to connect and share something with them is going to get a reaction for sure.
I've seen videos of your performances. I don't know how much you study them before and how you select those songs or the key. As one actress told me, Sharon Lawrence, she says, ask him about the key. Is it the key that's most important to tune into them?
I mostly choose what I like, and I hope they're going to like it as well. So I like mostly minor keys, something sad, which I think kind of works for animals because they can sense the sadness. Hallelujah. They try to reassure me and comfort me. So that's why there's always a bit of contact. You know, they touch me, rub their heads against me and stuff like this. And I choose love songs because I'm convinced that they're very intuitive and that they can sense what I'm trying to say to them. I'm trying to profess my love in a way. I heard that animals also enjoy classical music. I used to live alone before. Defense love low vibrations. So there's all kind of different things. I will also play something with more rhythm for parrots, because they're one of the only animals with a sense of rhythm. So yeah, there's little specificities like this.
Yeah, I've seen the parrot videos, the elephants, as you mentioned, do their own kind of dance. I mean, we go through all the different encounters, but you get them so relaxed and they're swaying their trunk or pushing it underneath the fence to touch you, like to extend a hand. And as you say, the sense of the vibration, it's just lovely to see. I mean, when I've watched, and we've spoken to a lot of different wildlife documentarians or people who study earth sciences who go out into the world. But I like how you pair it with the music because it gives a deeper storytelling and it unlocks something in the song, like Country Roads. It makes me think about the song. What does that mean, Country Roads, for animals? Let's go back to the home where we belong. Life is older. Than the trees. Those songs mean something to you? It makes me think, obviously, I hope it makes us all think when we see this, that we've dominated this earth so long, but we share this earth. We should be doing a better job at sharing it with them. And this song tells something about their relationship with the earth. Because there's this whole field of study called road ecology, like how our cities and roads and highways especially are cutting animals off from their natural habitats. And so they can no longer make their annual migrations as they're cut off from their natural food sources. It also limits their ability to mate and reproduce. And you see elephants and other animals, you know, at a great risk to their lives, making these road crossings. And often they're killed doing this. So as I listen to Country Roads again, let's take a moment to think about our man-made roads. Since cars and trucks kill more wildlife than almost anything else humans do. If you look at the asphalt we drive on today, in most of our highways, they're only 50 to 70 years old. Basically, that's the span of a single human lifetime. But the migration paths these animals are walking have been carved into the earth, you know, going back over 6,000 years. So from their perspective, when an animal tries to cross a highway, it's following what they call it, a ghost road, that's three times older than the Roman Empire. We think of our road networks as permanent, but think about it from behind their eyes, like to a deer or an elk, because I really think animals have a deeper sense of ancestral memory. So to a deer or an elk, our 50-year-old highway is just a temporary obstacle that was dropped overnight across a trail their ancestors have used for, you know, 60 centuries. And so listening to that, and as you perform it, made me think about our relationship to that. You know, it's something to think about.
Yeah, I think we have a responsibility. You know, it's not because we are stronger that we need to exploit and slaughter and torture. And I think, given the fact that we have so much more power in a way, we should use this for good. And I do think something clicked in me after my first meeting with cows. And I really hope that if I can show through my videos how sensitive and beautiful animals are, and it can click for some other people. Hopefully, there's a long way to go, but hopefully we start treating animals better.
And so you're an animal lover, an environmentalist, you have a deep sensitivity. How has this more recent connection through performing music, how has that changed your appreciation of the earth?
Well, it completely changed my perception of animals, you know. That's the day I became a vegetarian after my first meeting with cows. And later on, I learned more about the dairy industry and egg industry, and I went vegan. But I would say I always knew it was wrong, but the meat industry is a bit perverse. But they have a way to pretend it's not there and make you forget that it's there. And once you realize what's really happening, there's no going back, you know.
So talking about the way we treat animals prior to killing them, because there's regenerative farming and there's a nice relationship that can exist. And I do understand that. So you obviously, you could no longer consume them. It makes us think about our carbon footprint on this earth as well as we watch animals. Everything is a circular economy for them. They don't have to study what is a circular economy. What is it not to put trash on this earth and consume more than is necessary. There's so much we can learn from them. And I think intuitive intelligence, again, something that they have and don't lose, and the nonverbal communication that I think in these years, particularly now with the advance of AI and how we're so consumed by our machines and our screens that we forget all the other forms of language. I think it's a real eye-opener to watch that communication that takes place in your videos as you play music. You talked about the first videos that you made were with cows. So these are farm animals. They've kind of already accustomed to human-made sounds, voices, engines, tools. And then, you know, you gradually progressed, as I mentioned, like white tigers or elephants. I mean, these are in sanctuaries, but they have much different instincts by nature. Can you paint the picture? You know, what's that difference playing for a wild animal who doesn't have this long relationship with humans?
I'll tell you, I think like there's no difference. I think we're all on an equal scale. Of course, you have to be careful with wild animals because they are less accustomed to us. And so they can be reactions that you don't really expect and they can be scared of you. But I feel like we're all part of this world and we're kind of all the same. So that's why I didn't always used to think that way because I was always cautious. I didn't want to do big cats because I felt like it would be kind of a joke. Like they're just going to want to eat me and that's all they're going to think about. But then I tried it just to see without even taking a video the first time with lions, and they all started lining up in front of me and falling asleep. There were almost 20 lions, so that was pretty special. And so why not try it again and again? And it turns out big cats are the most receptive species so far. Like there's never been a failed attempt, which can happen with other animals. So yeah, I would say I can connect with anything now. People make jokes now that like try to sing for bees or stuff like this. Well, I think it can happen, you know? So yeah, I'm open to anything now. Some people say sharks or crocodiles just to make fun, like, oh, you're gonna die. But you know, I think there's always a way to connect, and if you're being cautious and you don't threaten the animals, something beautiful can happen.
Yeah, I've known some people we've had on our show who've traveled in the Amazon. What would that be like with a very wild animal experience?
It's hard to... It's why I haven't done it, because it's so hard in the wild to organize a shoot, because I need some people to film me, can't really wait the whole day and hope for the best. But sometimes I go just for fun to sing in the forest nearby, and I love to hear birds singing along and things like this. Last week ago, I was singing quite late and I didn't even notice that it was nighttime, because you know, in winter it's like around 5. And so there were bats all around me as I was singing, and that was quite special, I would say. You know, I never expected this. But if I get the chance to do it in the wild, that would be great. I know there are a lot of wild expeditions, and I've been talking to a few of them. So hopefully in the future.
I did see a video that you did with a sea lion, and it was very moving. This is a kind of aquarium where he comes up, he closes his eyes, comes right up to you. Again, this level of trust that you would only expect with a trainer who had been working with them a long time, right?
Yeah. It's funny because there was this one particular individual that really responded, because there are a few sea lions. A lot of people criticize this video actually because the place seems small, but it's actually, I think it's the second biggest tank in Europe. I wish they could be in the wild. But also why I try to be an advocate for veganism, because I know there's about 100,000 of those sea lions that are killed because of the fishing industry, because they have such giant nets and they don't even care what they catch and don't even care what they kill. And so, yeah, sea lions are on the way to be a endangered species. And so it's very sad to see. But I wish all the animals of the world could live free and in the wild. But I don't think it's the case for now.
Well, you know, speaking of freedom, I think it's fine that you use that because it sheds a light on it. You bring in individual animal and you're saying, what if they were free? This shouldn't exist. You know, look at as best you can, giving us a window onto that this is an individual life.
And it gives me also a chance to share some organizations very dear to my heart that work for conservation and all those things. So I will often put a link under the videos.
You mentioned they're free. We often see a bird in the sky or a panther on the savannah. And I mean, we've all felt this. We've envied their freedom. What's really interesting to see these, the wild animals or the farm animals or those on sanctuary, I'm just wondering what has being around them taught you about freedom? I mean, what we see in the videos is they see something gentle and authentic. But as I watch, it seems to awaken another layer of freedom in them. That's what I see.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart. The very next day.
I hope so. I hope they can escape. Although, you know, at a lot of sanctuaries, so they escaped already a very dark past. And it's always very surprising and very inspiring to me. These animals are just willing to forget and forgive right away. You know, they want to connect. Even though they've been so heavily mistreated by human beings, they just want to love us again.
Once bitten and twice shy, keep my distance.
You know, I learned about the past of those animals and how they were treated. It's within a few minutes where we build this trust and we build this connection, and it's something that's that I really admire in the animal kingdom. This way to be so forgiving, and so yeah, I think we should learn a thing or two.
Yes, and so what is that, like, being around them taught you about the nature of freedom? I mean, we fill our time so much. It's not something you observe when you see animals, what they're, I mean, maybe struggle for their survival or to eat, but they don't fill their time. They don't, of the stresses of jobs and works and how we have to distract ourselves all the time. And what has that made you reflect on the nature of freedom?
Yeah, I think it's an ego thing for us. We always need to be somewhere, or we always need to be doing something. Yeah, it's nice to witness how eat some hay, and yeah, I guess they are much happier than we are, in a way. The ones that are not mistreated, of course. But I sometimes think, and it's also why it's so soothing for me to be around them, because it's one of those quiet, peaceful moments where you just, you're there, you're present, and you connect with them, and there's nothing else. And so, it feels very, it's like my own private little therapy in a way, because it's so rewarding and so soothing.
Yeah, I've spoken to scientists like Rupert Sheldrake, who believes that the mind exists. It's not just, and a lot of Eastern philosophy too goes back to these thoughts as well, that the mind extends beyond what we think, therefore I am. Not everyone has this way of thinking, the mind is in the body, but with non-human animals, it extends beyond. There's a kind of, like a cloud of thinking, that you have the collective consciousness. It happens in the dreaming mind, the collective spirits. What have you picked up being so close to them?
I will do this thing for TV channels that want to witness it live. And I feel like when it's less of an intimate setting, it doesn't work as so. I'm like, come on, don't leave me hanging, because they're going to think, you know, I want the magic to happen in front of all those people. And when I try to tell them, let's do something, let's connect, I feel like right away, every time, there's always something that happens. So it's quite special, yeah. Musical abilities, you know, the way they sing and the noises they make. I think they can sense that there's no threats. And it's also something they've never seen or experienced before, so it's something new. Most animals are very curious, so they will want to investigate what's going on. And so, yeah, it allows for a deeper, connection. Especially with some wild animals that are a bit more shy. The okapi, I sang for an okapi, and I was told, you know, there's no way anything is going to happen because they're so shy, they're so wild. Try it anyways, but don't expect anything. And then he came right against me, touching, my face with the mouth. And
if you're gonna stay.
Yeah, and what's nice to see is you draw out an emotion. People put this through an analytical lens and say, oh, maybe you're just seeing trust, but it's not emotion. Well, I call it emotion. I can get a different lens of what it might be like to be behind their eyes. I'm projecting my emotion, but because you've come to the table with your emotion, I can get a little bit deeper into what that might be through their eyes.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Like cats and dogs, we've lived among them, like most of us have an experience of them. But these are other wildlife videos that are often shot from a distance. And I get a different sense because they're not, It's not that relationship isn't captured. They're interesting in different ways. I'm also interested in creativity in animals.
Well, I did. I wrote this song about childhood and first loves and nostalgia. And so I went in my old school that I was in when I was a kid, and I went to sing the song with the kids there. That was my old teacher. And then I thought, why not record outside as the kids are playing, you know? And so I picked up on a few of those sounds. But I also thought later on, this is cute, this is fine. But I remember as a kid, I felt like nature was much more present than it is today, in a way. I don't know how to explain it, but I feel like I would always see cows, I would always see horses, I would always hear birds singing. And now in the big city, I don't get that anymore. So I thought, why not incorporate some like singing birds into the song? And that's what I did. I put, and I think it makes a much better song than it was, you know, to hear all those birds singing and with the kids playing. I really tried to capture this vibe of nostalgia, and I think it really works. Yeah.
Again, it would be just our interpretation. And what are some of the simple things that you've learned from animals?
No, I won't be afraid.
Well, they did teach me one thing is I always used to be scared of judgment whenever I would sing for human beings. You know, I would think, what if I mess up this note or if I do this, and, you know, and I was kind of scared of that. And so I think it would make for a poor performance maybe sometimes.
Stand by.
But with animals, I know there's no judgment involved, and so I just try to connect, and I do my best to share something with them. And now with human beings, I went back to do a little show a few weeks ago, and I was scared at first. I was a bit like in my thoughts and not connecting with people, and then one or two songs in, I was like, you know what? It's just like with animals. Let's just have a good time and try to share something with them and really, you know, do the same thing that you're doing in those enclosures. And I think it made for a much better performance. So yeah, maybe don't be in your head about what people might think when they're not even thinking it at all, probably. And just care about connecting. And I think it made me a better artist. I hope so anyway.
Yeah, well, it's the biggest compliment that I've seen, the way they come up and they touch you, that sign of trust where they're getting so close to you. But you really managed to keep your composure. I think that you've seen from the reactions and all the comments, and I'm sure that you're also in touch with maybe even scientists. Are you working with any?
I am working with some scientists here in France. Basically, what's happening is that we filmed the animals before a show, during a show, and after, to see if the behavior changes or if anything is like evolving. And I think it's going to take a few attempts to get a better idea. You know, they're going to try it not just with me, but with some other musicians. So it takes a while, but almost a year ago, giraffes I sang for, zebras, those kind of animals.
Yeah, because to me, it just seemed like, I think that the way you approach, you know, just let them be themselves and react in a natural way. It's not forcing human cognition on them.
I would never want to do anything that goes against their well-being, you know. So anytime, for example, I've been singing for some animals, and the person working there will tell me, oh, they're a bit stressed, you know. And so we'll stop right away, you know. It's like if I can sense any kind of security or things like this, then there's no point. There's no point to it. So yeah, I guess that also involves what you're saying.
So you have a real kind of playlist of things that you're giving them variety, or continuing the same song until they come?
I usually do is play the same song over and over again for a little bit, for like around 30 minutes. But if I can tell they want more, then I move on to another song. But sometimes, like, I really like to capture them coming to us, because I feel like it shows their decision and force them to be, like, around us. And it's always also, I think, helps us have a better moments because they don't feel threatened if they're taking the decision and not the other way around, you know. So we always stay further away and let them come to us. But there's also some beautiful moments once they're there. With the elephants, actually, I'm telling you, it sometimes takes a little bit of time. With the elephants, that day, it was like right away. I sat down, I started playing, and they came running. So that was very special. And we weren't really even ready to film, you know, so that's why, like, normally I would always have one person on the side to capture a part and one person behind me, but now both camera women, they weren't ready, so they were both behind me. So this video could have been even more crazy, but I think it's also captured a very authentic moment, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, but there's also a danger involved, right? Like, there's your encounters with rhinoceros, and you're right there sitting on the rocks where the rhinoceros comes, right? So what is your preparation for that?
Well, on the rock, it was my first ever time singing for rhinos, and it's the time I was the most scared ever of singing for animals, because same kind of thing with the okapi. I was told they're not gonna come. So they were like, in worst case scenario, if they do come, you're on this rock and they can't really climb up. But they did come, and they did find a way to like put a foot on the rock to climb a little bit up. But luckily enough, they were super sweet. You know, to me now, they're just like huge cows, rhinos, because they're very sweet. And I guess, yeah, if they feel threatened, it's a good thing that they're cautious, because, you know, in this world, like poachers and things like this. But with me, it's been such a sweet moment, and I love them so much. You know, I feel like they're very misunderstood.
No, that is amazing. Oftentimes animals can, because they are so sensitive, turn on people who have good intentions, but it's misinterpreted.
It might be something in the background, or it could be anything.
It's why a perfume.
Yeah. By the way, I don't wear any perfume when I go and sing for the animals. And I always want to choose a neutral soap, because that's something I've been cautious about, to not have any strong smell or anything like this. So yeah, it's very natural.
Well, they're all licking you. I have to say, they're licking, and you have great composure, but they want to get as much information off your body as possible, but they are really drawn to you. So I do want to know how you do that. And they're all over your guitar, every inch of it, rubbing their muzzle on, you know, like, can I play this too?
Maybe because now there's so much smell of guitar fish for them, I'm guessing, because I don't really clean it in between shoots. So I'm guessing it must feel like a bunch of wonderful different species all at once on the guitar, and maybe that's why they're so transfixed.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I don't know enough about. In our project, The Creative Process, we've talked to so many people, but the art of scent is one area I haven't explored as much. But it might be the other animals are leaving. We talk about their ability to communicate, are leaving scents that almost say, this is safe here. Because I think that, like, we know marking territories, there's different ways that they can leave their messages in ways that we can't read. And I know you also have musicians in your family. I'm wondering, you obviously have a really close family. You talked about your mom. I think your dad is also in music, and you've seen you with your grandmother. Like, what have they taught you that you think is, like, prepared you for this life and this role that you have?
You know, my parents have always been very open about me choosing this path of a musician. So it's been nice for me, because I feel like there could be this pressure about making it, and it can be a very scary thing, because as time passes, you're like, well, I'm in my 20s, I'm in my late 20s, still hasn't worked, so what can I do? And yeah, my parents have always been very supportive. You know, I've lived with them for much longer than I should have, and but they've always been super nice. My dad's a DJ, so he's kind of in that world, but not really, because it's a really different world, the nightclubs and the DJing. But yeah, I have a bunch of uncles that play the guitar, and so I would pick up their guitars when they weren't here. And I'm lucky enough that I have a very musical family. And they've always been very supportive,
I know that you've also learned from the musicians that you've had a chance to like play on stage with Green Day or these other musicians who you've learned from their music? Obviously, they're teachers in another way, even though they might not be directly. I guess, what have you learned from them, from the other artists that you admire and you interpret?
Well, I think we do have a responsibility in a way as musicians, because like anything Green Day would have said when I was a teenager, I would have tried to do the same thing. It can be very inspiring other artists, especially when you're quite young. And yeah, I feel like with Green Day, I've always been such a huge fan, and I got the opportunity to see them almost five times on stage. And yeah, they're so generous because they always bring up a fan up on stage. And I remember as a kid when I saw them for the first time, they brought this girl up, and they were like, beforehand, they were like, who wants to come up? And I was like maybe 300 meters away. And I was like, what if he picks me? Even though there wasn't any shot that this could happen. And so many years later, the fact that I got to sing with him on stage, that was so very special. And after the show, I stuck around. Yeah, after the show, I stuck around and I could see the Trickle, the drummer, giving out drumsticks to people and hanging out. And it's such an inspiring thing to see that even after a big career, they didn't lose their humanity, and they are still so generous. And I hope I can, if I'm lucky enough to have a long career, I hope I can be the same. Indeed. But yeah, for me, I feel very grateful because I have this platform and I get to share this with many people. But I feel like it really, really didn't change a thing in my daily life. So I hope it stays the same. Yeah.
And so it's interesting how, you know, you're teaching people the art of not just communicating with animals. I think it's, you know, increasing our empathy, increasing our patience. Like you say, you wait for them to come to you. It's teaching us how to establish trust in other humans. I think that we don't give things time. There's a lot that we can learn from that. As you go back into the human world, what has that taught you? You said it changed your relationship with human audiences, but also the first time you meet people, like are the things you're noticing or how you establish trust with them or closer connection, you know, like that. How does that awaken all these interpersonal skills, as they call them?
I'm still not the best with people. I wish I was. I'm a bit more shy. And so I kind of like to stay home with my girlfriend and that's it. So I don't really like to go out in the city and stuff. In fact, I think spending time with animals now when I have to take the subway and stuff, I feel much more stimulated than I was before. And it's a bit too much now. I don't know how to explain it. But this animal thing didn't really help with human beings, I guess, except with my shows, as I mentioned. But with connecting with people, there's still the sense of not fully secure. But I hope it can happen someday, hopefully, yeah.
I think what you're saying is you have that trust with your girlfriend, with your family. And in a way, you're saying humans, maybe. We have so many layers, but...
Yeah, I feel like I became like oversensitive about some topics. For example, even with veganism, I used to, if it's just me that's vegan, it's fine. But now, if I'm eating at a restaurant and some of my friends are eating meat and it's right next to me, and I just think about this was a person, individual, and had feelings. And so I'm a bit oversensitive for, maybe rightfully so, I think, but some people will disagree. But so, yeah, it's a lot of things that changed into my perception of life and my way of dealing with other people.
Yes, because I heard that you also didn't like to fly so much.
Right. If you break it down, it's very weird. We're like in this huge metal box in the air, and I think it's so unnatural, and it's kind of scary, but I think my girlfriend wants to visit the world, so I will try to go overcome those fears. But yeah, there's something about flying that I really don't like now. I used to write mostly at night when I couldn't fall asleep, and it was like around 4 a.m. And it's in a bit of a sad time for me a few years back. And now with my girlfriend, I'm so happy, and I blame her because I'm like, wow, we're so like happy with our lives that I don't even know what to write about now, you know, because I used to write mostly depressing stuff. So I've been trying to write some happy stuff, but it doesn't have the same feeling to it. So yeah, there's that. But yeah, it's it always used to be when I couldn't sleep, and it was around like during the night, and
it's some sense of loss going around in different ways. One wished for loss, but hopes that sparks your creative process further. It's a hard thing to say that you're so happy that there's no stories to tell, because it's not no upheaval. But yeah, that's a nice thing to have. I do want to ask, this time of year, it's the holidays. We're all thinking about the end of the year. We're reconnecting to ourselves, to our family, what matters most to us. I wonder, is there as an element of spirituality in that for you? Or we know you appreciate earth and the animals.
But there's mostly a sense of anger because of the traditions. And like in France, we have this thing called foie gras, where you kind of torture, those ducks. And it's been mostly fighting against that lately. It's been very present. I want to tell everybody, don't diet this year, don't do this. And so we're having a vegan Christmas with my family. My mom wants to like surprise us with some vegan recipes, so we're gonna have that. And so I want to work with a tour manager that allows me to tour into sanctuaries, because I think it would be a cool idea to just do an acoustic shows for a handful of people in a sanctuary, and then we learn more about the animals. So it's something I want to do, to like educate myself, and if people can learn also some stuff about the animals, I think it would be great. I do think we need to be more transparent about what goes on into animal exploitation, especially for young people, so that they know what they are participating in, because I didn't. And I don't know if at school it can happen, but maybe if at school it has a program that also explains nutrition and what we put into our bodies and what does it do. And yeah, that would be interesting, definitely. I'm convinced that the future of this world is through veganism, because it's the meat industry is destroying not only lives but the planet as well. So I do think people are clicking more and more, which is contradictory, because also the numbers have never been this bad in the history of the animal exploitation realm. So I've been meeting so many people that are inspired by animals, that want to help. It's maybe because I'm also in that world now that I get to share. But I don't know, all my family, they've been starting one by one to become vegetarian or vegan. Some of my friends are interested in it. So I really hope the future of that world is living in harmony and not hurting anyone.
Yeah, and of course it will help our environment too. We're putting too much carbon, and a lot of that has to do with farming animals. So yeah. Thank you, Plume. Thank you, Loris. It's more than notes, and listening is more than hearing. In quiet presence and shared sound, humans and animals can have real encounters, not just to understand each other, but to recognize each other's trust, curiosity, stillness, and compassion. Sometimes in that space, something extraordinary can quietly bloom. We all love and cherish our communities, our families. We all live on one planet we call home. Thank you for adding your voice to One Planet Podcast and the creative process.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been nice.
The Creative Process and One Planet Podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation. This interview was conducted by Mia Funk with the participation of collaborating universities and students. Associate interviews producer on this episode was Sophie Garnier. The music featured in this episode was performed by Loris Asadian, recording under the name Plume, and is used with his permission. You heard his original tracks, Flu and Rien du Tout, along with his interpretations of Somewhere Over the Rainbow by Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg, Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, and Country Roads by Bill Danoff, Taffy Nivert, and John Denver. We also heard Plume's versions of Last Christmas by George Michael, Imagine by John Lennon and Yoko Ono, Riptide by Vance Joy, and Stand By Me by Benny King, Jerry Leiber, and Mick Stoller. These sessions were recorded in the field during Plume's work at animal sanctuaries and habitats. From everyone here at the Creative Process and One Planet podcast, we wish you a happy and creative new year. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet podcast and be part of the climate change solution, just follow us on Instagram on @creativeprocesspodcast and send us a DM. Thank you for listening. Et pourtant, de temps en temps, tu me tentes un peu beaucoup, vraiment trop.